Hi, I'm Gracie Mercedes, and welcome back to Not Blank Enough, a podcast about everyday insecurities and triumphs. Today's episode is with actor, public speaker, and podcast host, Ashley Blaine Featherston Jenkins. We spoke about imposter syndrome, self-confidence, and being a control freak. All this and more in today's episode titled, Not Surrendering Enough. Hi, Ashley, and welcome to Not Blank Enough.
Hi, Gracie. I just adore you. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God, I adore you. This is just going to be a big love fest, I can tell already.
Duh.
Oh my God. Well, I usually start off saying how I know the person I'm interviewing. Mm-hmm. And you and I just met on the set of Grand Cru. You yes. were playing Talia and still are playing Talia because we got a second season.
I'm so excited. I was literally holding my breath. Like, how stressful is it, Gracie?
It's like waiting to hear if you got the job all over again.
Is it worse? Like waiting to see if you got it, like after the test or whatever, or was this waiting to see if you go back to for season 2?
You know what? It's almost worse because you know how good it is now. Like yeah. when you're waiting for the job, you can only imagine what the job's going to be like. Mm. And you don't know, sometimes people get jobs and they're not happy for whatever reason, but we had such an amazing season and it was so wonderful. And I have like a new family that I was like, we have to be able to do this again. So yeah, I think waiting for that second season announcement was low-key torture.
Yeah, NBC was trying to drag that one out. I was like, NBC, come on now, y'all. Come on now. We ain't got time.
But oh yeah. my God. Well, Ashley plays Talia on Grand Cru, and she is a beautiful actress, and she's a podcast host and a public speaker. Tell me first off about your new podcast.
Trials to Triumphs. I have a new podcast. We are 4 episodes in as of Monday, a couple of days ago. It is all about the journey. My podcast is highlighting the stories of engaging and transparent individuals who are willing, so graciously willing, to take me through the journey of their lives and who they are and what they've learned along the way. And how they've been able to transform their trials into triumphs.
Mm.
It's fun. It's funny. It's also heartwarming and at times heartbreaking,
mm-hmm.
Which to me completely embodies the human experience, which is truly what my goal was from the beginning. I wanted to, for a lack of a better term, get down to the nitty gritty with people because that's how I am in my everyday life. And like I said, I feel so blessed that I've had so many other people pull up, show up to do the same with me. So I feel so grateful to have created a space in conjunction with OWN and LWC Studios where we are highlighting stories that need to be heard.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so in line with what we do here at Not Blank Enough. So thank you for being on our show. I truly believe that our blanks are almost blessings in disguise. You know, they make us, yeah. they encourage us, they make us do better. They make us try harder. So tell me a little bit about your upbringing. Where are you from?
I am from the DMV, the DC metropolitan area. I was born in Northwest DC at Columbia Hospital for Women, which is no longer there, but it's like, if you're from DC, many of us, like my father was born there too. I grew up in Gaithersburg, Maryland, which is like 25 miles outside of the city. So I really grew up kind of having a dual experience. Like we did stuff in the city. My church was in the city and, you know, I went to school in Gaithersburg. I ended up going to Howard, which is in Washington, DC too. So yeah, that's where I'm from the DMV. Proud Marylander.
And what was your childhood like there?
You know, I had a beautiful childhood. You know, I feel like in the 80s, they were very, it's still a thing, but I feel like in the 80s, they were very popular, like developments, you know, these neighborhoods of 100 homes or whatever, and they all kind of looked the same,
but yeah. mm-hmm.
there's like, you could pick the Gracie house, you could pick the Ashley house, you could pick the whatever house. And so that's the type of neighborhood I grew up in. I grew up in like a circle. Uh-huh. So it wasn't a cul-de-sac, but it was like a full circle. And there was like an outer circle and there was an inner circle. So we lived in the outer circle in a beautiful neighborhood. You know, my parents moved into the house that I grew up in my entire life. They moved in like maybe a month or two before I was born. So I'm really one of those people that lived in the same house my entire life.
Wow.
Yeah. My parents didn't move from the house that I grew up in until a year after I moved to LA. I always thought it was so interesting. People that like had different moved from different
so much as a child.
Oh, like, I think that's so interesting.
And the funny thing is I was born and raised in New York and didn't move until I moved to Los Angeles at 27. But within New York, we moved around a lot, like different apartments. And I never lived in a house until I bought my first house in Los Angeles, because in New York, you don't really have a house, at least not in the city. And so in Brooklyn and Manhattan, it was just like apartment to apartment to apartment.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you live like in different boroughs too?
Well, I was born in Brooklyn and I lived in Brooklyn until I was 12. And then we moved to Manhattan. My mom at that time married my stepfather, who she's still with, and they both worked in finance. And so we moved downtown.
Come on, finance.
Yeah, we lived, we moved by the financial district.
Moving on up.
Exactly. Yeah. Went from like a crappy little apartment in Brooklyn to like a doorman building in Battery Park City. It was definitely a Jefferson story.
That's cute.
But I think because I moved so much, I don't have like materialistic attachments. Like I like clean out my closet and my place like every 3 to 6 months. I don't have a lot of stuff. I don't get attached to where I live. Like even when I had a house that I bought with my ex-husband, like we were there for 5 years and I was like, I'm ready to move. Like I was just like, I like moving. I like change. And like, I like a different environment kind of thing. Yeah.
You know, what's interesting that explains a lot about me, because I do hold on to stuff. I'm not at all like in a hoarder way, because what saves me is that I'm very organized. So I like organization. I like order. I don't like clutter, but I'm the girl that still has all of the notes I passed in middle school. I still have
them. Oh my God. Wow.
I am the girl who every card I've ever received, I have them in boxes. I keep them. The first time I went to homecoming when I was like in a sophomore, maybe in high school, I still have the flowers that I was given. I have them like dried flowers. Like I'm very sentimental.
Wow. Yeah.
That's really what it is. You know, I joke with Daryl, my husband now, because where we live in LA, it's not really like community. So like I'm craving, like, I want to go to the same butcher every day. And he's like, hey, Ashley. And I'm like, hey, give me the usual, Scotty. Like, I want to go, you know, into Starbucks. And they're like, got your order ready. And I'm like, oh, thanks. Like, I like that. And I'm craving that. And honestly, I don't know that LA is really that place for that. I don't know if maybe it depends on where you live.
I think certain neighborhoods are a little more close knit. And if you start going to the same places, unlike you, opposite to you, I think I'm getting better at this. But when I first moved to Los Angeles in particular, I was almost taken aback by people saying like, hey, good morning. How are you? Or like, you know, the person behind the day. And I'm just like, what?
The New Yorker.
You know what I mean? The New Yorker in me is like, I don't know you. Why do you say hello to me? And now I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's sweet. Hello. How are you? Like, I live in a cute little neighborhood on the east side in Echo Park. And there's all these like little stores down the block. And, you know, it's just a strip of stores. And so everyone kind of knows each other, and there's a juice thing and a coffee thing.
Yes.
And you know what I mean? And when you go into those stores, they really take their time. They ask you how you're doing. And part of me, you know, still very much a New Yorker, who's like, I gotta go. Can we just speed this up? Can you just ask me my order, bring it, and let's go? But yeah, I think that is definitely a part of upbringing, right?
Yeah. Because so in looking for wherever we move next, I'm like, I need that. I need the strip of stores. I want to be able to, you know, do my morning walk. And I'm like, oh my God, Bill, how's it going? Like, I don't know why, where I'm coming up with these names, but that's what I want. So that's what my upbringing was. It was
community.
It was community. It was, we lived in a pretty large neighborhood, mostly consisting of single family homes. Let's say there were 125 homes or something like that in my neighborhood. Mm. We were one of five Black families in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it's weird. When I look back, where I grew up was somewhat diverse, like Montgomery County, Maryland, Gaithersburg. You know, I went to school with everybody, but specifically where I grew up, the neighborhood that I was in didn't feel diverse at all. You know, when I was playing with the kids, you know, we would make forts and whatever in the woods and da da da. Like I was the Black kid playing with all of the white kids.
Yeah. School was more diverse though.
School was more diverse, but we were still in the minority, but right. I went to school with everybody. Mm. 1000%. But it was more so, I've never really broken it down in my head like this until now. It was more so my neighborhood that didn't feel, mm-hmm. I felt like the Black girl in the white neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But even then, I don't know that it was so conscious. I just think it was a fact, but I didn't really feel those walls closing in on me necessarily. I think my parents noticed it, but I don't know if I felt it.
Right. And with that, you're in this community where you are kind of the minority. School's a little more diverse, but still minority. Was there ever a feeling, a blank that stemmed from this environment as a child for you?
Actually, I'm remembering this incident, which maybe was a blank for me. And I hope this is what you want me to do. But yeah. What I'm going to say is something that I just didn't quite understand.
And yeah, yeah. Kind of,
okay, so we used to like make forts and stuff in people's backyards, and we would go, it's so crazy in retrospect. We used to go like deep into the woods, like deep to the point where I remember one time we got lost and we were like, oh, no. We had no idea where we were. We're seeing hidden creeks and streams. It looked like, I mean, it was like Narnia or something. It was really, really crazy. We would just go really, and we were young, probably 8, 9, whatever. Hmm. I was the Black kid playing with my white friends in the neighborhood. There was a boy we were playing with and we were building a fort, and he hit me with, I don't know where we got these materials from, but he hit me with like a big piece of like plywood.
Ooh.
And I'll be honest, I don't remember if it was like intentional, if it was an accident, could have been somewhere in between. But I do remember he didn't really show any remorse. It was kind of like it was a casualty of whatever. So I went home, and I didn't even go home to like tell. I just went home. I had a big knot on my head, and my parents were like, "What happened to you?" And I just said really plainly, like, Ryan hit me with the thing. Like, I don't remember how I described it. Now, I remember my dad was so furious. And in retrospect, now being an adult, having neighbors, I don't know what their interaction had been, right? That's the crazy thing about, and actually I might ask my dad, my parents now that I'm thinking about this moment, I might call them later and ask, but I don't know what the backstory was, but I know that that particular kid coming from that particular household, it was an issue. It was deeper in that moment. It was very, and I do remember being really confused. I remember being like, why are my parents so upset? Like, yeah. Okay, like he hit me. Like, let's just kind of move on. But it was like a thing. I want to say, I think my parents tried to call to discuss it. They didn't pick up. So my dad took me down there. So now I'm embarrassed. I'm like, he's dragging me down the street. I'm like, Dad, I don't want to do this. I'm sure he didn't mean it. He's like, no, we're going there. So knock on the door. It's a whole thing. You know, the mother's like acting scared, and they had three boys. This was the eldest boy that hit me. And I'm just standing there so confused. And I remember my dad wanted to talk to the boy Ryan's dad, but the dad was like scared, of course. Mm. And so my dad ended up being like, whatever, I'm gonna talk to this lady. And he basically, to paraphrase, was just like, don't ever let one of your sons put their hand on my child, period. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't play that. Like, look at my child. What could have happened that she would come home looking like this? Mm. And I remember her not having much emotion at all. Her really just standing there like, you know, behind the glass. I remember she was behind a glass, like the breezeway door. She had like one of those. She was behind, didn't even open it. But in retrospect, that was a blank for me, because I didn't understand how something in my head was such a thing. But I realize now that I'm thinking about it, and again, I'm going to ask my parents, I think it was a racial thing. I think they had already done some things that were unsavory, or a lack of acknowledgement in other areas, or rude, or things that happened that I just wasn't privy to. But that was definitely the icing on top of the cake. When one of their children hurt my parents' child, they were like, oh no, we have to address this. And literally never spoke to them again, never saw them again. They didn't even look our way.
Wow.
It was like everything after that changed.
That's crazy. So as a kid, not knowing, you know, thinking it's just like this little thing, but not realizing the layers behind it and the layers underneath it.
Yeah, there's layers. And you have to give grace to your parents. Mm-hmm. They were dealing with situations at home, at work, with our schools, whatever it was, you know what I mean? That they were dealing with microaggressions every day that we probably can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. So It was crazy. But that was, I think after that was the first time that I was really like, oh, I'm a little different.
Yeah.
I don't even think it was that, it was not really that conscious until then.
The blank wasn't necessarily, I'm not even white enough, but just like, I'm not the same enough. Right. Like almost like there's something different here. And I'm not sure what it is, but there's something different here.
Yeah. Like there's something different here and I'm treated somewhat differently. That's really what it was. It was like, oh, I'm treated differently. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. There's a different type of regard over my life and over what happens to me than there is over these white kids that I'm playing with every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what a discovery to have at such a young age.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. For sure.
And then tell me a little bit about high school. What kind of girl were you in high school, Ashley?
Oh my gosh. I was the same as I am now. Honestly, no, high school was cool. I've always had like a really good tribe of friends. So I, you know, was, you know, hanging out with my friends, but I also did everything. Like I was the SGA historian. I was a cheerleader. I was on step team. I was doing pageants. I started acting. God. Yeah, I started acting professionally at 14. So I was also the kid and I did my first professional show at 15. So I was the kid that was like leaving to go to tech rehearsals and, you know, was getting paid to act and having to, you know, I was running around doing all the things. I was the first Black Miss Quince Orchard. So we have like our school pageant. I was the first Black one to be crowned Miss Quince Orchard.
Wow.
I was in the choir. I'm the same person I am now. That's basically, but high school was fun. It was really, really fun. One of my best friends who we met in eighth grade, she's still my best friend today, Crystal. But it's crazy because you know, the people that are like, I just wish I could go back to high school and college. I'm like,
No, thanks.
Yeah. Like being a teenager is horrible. Ratch. It's horrible. Like what, like being an adult is rough, but like being a teenager, like raging hormones and like crying, listening to Usher and B2K. Like I don't, B2K. Like I don't really, I'm good. You know?
Yeah. Wait, your high school experience and who you were in high school to me sounds like such a, like a textbook, what you see on TV. You know what I mean? Like the popular girl in school and like high school and stuff, which I'm still, again, being born and raised in New York City, I'm always still fascinated by that experience. I had nothing like that as my high school experience. I went to an all girls Catholic high school in Midtown Manhattan, where every girl was a lot of quote unquote bad girls in my school. And, you know, we had two teams. We had a volleyball team and a basketball team. That was it. We didn't have any cheerleading. We didn't have any extra sports. We didn't really have any, we didn't have theater. We didn't have any extra curriculum. Like it was very, you're here to learn and get the hell out.
Wow.
We had no boys. Every time I hear about someone who had this like very like idyllic kind of high school experience or what you see on TV, because I grew up wanting to go to one of those high schools. You know what I mean? Like 90210. I was like, I want to go to 90210. Like I want to go to Beverly Hills High.
Wait, so Gracie, did you want to go to an all-girls school or was that like the decision for you?
The thing is in New York, I mean, I'm not sure if it's any different now. I don't think it is much different, but the public school education in the cities are so bad. Like in the five boroughs, they're not very good. A lot of kids go to Catholic schools because they're private schools that are cheaper than regular private schools, if that makes sense. And so I went to Catholic school my whole life. So it wasn't really any different going to Catholic high school. Most of the Catholic high schools in the city are all boys or all girls. Very few co-ed ones.
Gotcha.
I'm not even sure if there's any co-ed ones in Manhattan. That was normal for me. For me growing up, like everyone I went to Catholic school with from, you know, kindergarten to eighth grade, they all went on to go, or most of them went on to go to Catholic high schools. And usually they were all boys or all girls. So no more boys after eighth grade. It's horrible. I've said it on this podcast a million times, because what ends up happening is that you have these teenage girls who are meeting men in the real world because they don't have boys their age around them in school. So like, where are you meeting boys, right? Mm-mm. You're meeting them out in the world where they're not your age.
Yeah.
So no good. So in high school, how were your grades or how was your love life? Like, what, did you ever feel like not smart enough, not pretty enough, not any of these things?
My grades were actually just okay in high school. Like I would say I probably graduated with like a 3.0. And it's so crazy because I remember my parents were so, I'll go back to kind of more of what I experienced in high school, but just about the grades, mm-hmm. my parents sent me away to like SAT camp at UVA, University of Virginia, when I was maybe sophomore, junior in high school. And I hated it. You know, my parents were always very enriching with me, with my studies. You know, I did tutoring at Sylvan Learning Center. Like, mm-hmm. you know, my parents did all the things, but they couldn't really understand why my grades were just okay, because I'm a smart girl. I mm-hmm. wasn't bullied at school or anything. They just couldn't really figure it out. And so as I was preparing to apply to colleges and eventually go on to college, I remember them being like, you have to do better in college than you did in high school. And me being not at all concerned about it. And, you know, the truth is I then went on to Howard, graduated with like a 3.6, was on honor roll every semester. And it's because I was doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I was so uninspired in high school as far as studies were concerned.
Right.
There was honestly a lack of enrichment in on a personal level. Like that's the type of student I was and am.
Yeah.
I need to be able to connect with the teacher. I need a teacher to care. I need to care about a teacher too. I can't just have a teacher giving me assignments, throwing things up on the wall and expect me to show up fully and to have my brain working and firing on all cylinders. That's not how it works for me. I'm a very like, I thrive off of energy and personal connection. So when I got to college and I could pick the type of things I wanted to study and the type of professors I wanted to have and the type of programs I wanted to be a part of or sorority, whatever it is, then I realized, oh, I can create what I want. And I can thrive in that because I created it for myself. I remember after my first semester at Howard, my parents were like, who are you? And I was like, I told you that high school was just like, it was almost like in a weird way, like I felt like academically, I almost didn't feel like I fit in high school. It felt like, what are we doing? Like, what is this? We're talking about like old presidents and stuff. Like, I don't, why does this matter? Like, get me to the good. Why am I learning about like acute triangles and stuff? Is that even the right word?
Right. Like, it's so formulaic, right? We all learn the same crap that we mostly never use again in our lives. And so it sounds to me like you really need connection, again, community, kind of like you were saying earlier about wanting to feel that connection with people.
Yeah.
To be interested in, to want to work hard and do, you know, go at it with all of you, let's say.
Exactly.
What did you study in college?
Oh, I studied musical theater. No. I have a BFA in musical theater from Howard. Oh. Yeah. So that's
incredible.
Which is also interesting because at Howard, the musical theater program is basically like you're an acting major, a voice major, and a dance major all at once, and a musical theater major. So we have to do things that the acting majors are doing in their curriculum. We do things in the dance curriculum. We do things in the voice curriculum. Wow. And then we have our separate musical theater curriculum. So I never took less than 21 or 22 credits every semester. Like I was definitely team no sleep since I was 18 years old, but it was one of the best experiences of my life.
When did you know you wanted to be an actor?
Oh, I was very young. You know, I was definitely that kid in elementary school, first grade. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, on TV, an actor. I realize now that I'm older that that's very rare. Most people don't know who or what they want to be at such a young age. But I'm so happy. You know, I did a play when I was, I think, 4, when I was in preschool at my Montessori school. Wow. And we did the play, The Three Billy Goats Gruff. I talk about the story all the time, but I really think that that's when I got bit by the bug. You know, my parents before then, I always leaned into, you know, dance and gymnastics, like the performing side of things. I always liked that. I always too, just from a young age, liked talking to people. Like I was that kid that everyone used to be like, how did she speak so well to be 3? Or she asked me the most interesting question I've never been asked before. You know, and I think part of that was I have parents that always talk to me like an adult and allowed me to make choices and, you know, recognize that choices sometimes have consequences. Sometimes they have benefits and blessings. I also have an older sister. We're 9 years apart. So I think always seeing someone that was older than me really, really helped. But honestly, I've never wanted to do anything else than exactly what I'm doing right now. Like, I didn't even have a moment where like I pivoted slightly and was like, maybe I'll look into being a therapist or something. Like, yeah. I've always been on the same trajectory. But also, I have to really acknowledge my parents for seeing something in their child and doing everything they could to hone it. Every theater camp you could be in, every voice lesson you can have, every dance class you can have, every recital I had, every instrument I wanted to try. Like, my parents never deterred me from going after where I am now. Not to say it didn't scare them along the way.
What do your parents do for a living?
They're both retired now. Amen. But my mom is an expert in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So my mom's been doing what is now like the focus of the world. She's been doing that since the 70s.
Wow.
Companies would hire her company, to go in and basically talk to their employees about how to be better people, better employees, you know, what microaggressions are, how to be, you know, what the difference is between diversity, equity, and inclusion. She's been doing that my whole life. So I also think that really greatly inspires my worldview, because I had a mother who always saw people as equals and always wanted equality and always wanted to fight for the advancement of people that were oftentimes overlooked, especially in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And then my dad, oh my gosh, my dad's lived a million lives, but he really has. I mean, my dad has been a photographer. He was in Vietnam. He worked in sales, but he retired from working in sales at Comcast. Yeah, he was a sales executive at Comcast.
And your parents are still together?
Yes, they are.
Oh, that's so beautiful. So then you said you have one older sister who's 9 years older. Yeah. I'm the oldest and my next sister is 9 years younger.
Oh, I think we talked about that. Yeah.
And then I have two younger, even younger than them. So I feel almost like a second mom more than a sibling in so many ways. It really does sound like you had, despite recent developments of Mr. Cosby, like the Cosby Show family,
the recent developments are insane.
Insane.
Yes.
But let's pretend.
Yes.
That it's 1985. Yes. Just looking at the TV show.
Yes.
You know, we didn't see that a lot. You didn't see the like middle upper class Black family, you know, parents still together, the kids are happy and, you know, do well in school. They have their occasional problems, but you know, we're all like, you really kind of have a similar upbringing lifestyle.
1000%.
You said you went to Howard. You are in a sorority?
I am. I'm an AKA.
I know nothing about sororities. So
we're the ones in pink and green.
Oh, okay. And there was a whole drama with Insecure and the colors and the thing.
Which I personally want to go on record. I thought it was lovely. I thought it was a great representation. I was into it. I mean, we're actors. Like,
right.
You have to give authenticity. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Whatever.
Right. I was just like, I don't know. I went to NYU. I don't even know if they have, do they have sororities at NYU? Maybe not.
I don't know. I wanted to go to NYU. I wanted to go to Tisch.
Yeah. I didn't go to Tisch. I didn't really start pursuing acting until I was 30. And you know what? I believe everything happens for a reason, and it was a blessing in disguise.
Yes. And it's so crazy. Sorry, Gracie. I know this is your podcast.
No, go.
You know, I find individuals like yourself to be some of the most inspirational among us. And here's why.
Thank you.
I cannot imagine being 30, having a completely different career and waking up and being like, you know what? I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to get me a couple of headshots. I'm going to, you know, try out a commercial audition, get my feet wet.
In all fairness, I always wanted to be an actor. I was too afraid to go for this career. I had that first generational guilt where it's like, you need to have a real job. You're the first one to go to college. Like, you have to have a steady income. You cannot be chasing your dreams. And the irony of all that is that my mom has never been someone to put that pressure on me. I always put that pressure on myself. My best friend still is this girl, Jasmine, that I met at NYU. And we were roommates in college, and she went to Tisch for acting and directing. And I was at College of Arts and Science, and I was probably more plays than she was just because I loved it so much. So I would just like get into plays, but never thought I could pursue it for real, right? And I, out of school, started working in news, and then I worked in production, and then I ended up at MTV and kind of worked my way up from a PA to a producer. And it was very much, a crossroads. I was like 27, where I was like, am I going to keep doing this? Or am I going to pursue this thing I've always wanted to pursue? And so then I moved to LA at like 27. And it took me a few years to get my shit together before I actually consider myself like an actor or someone seriously pursuing it. Cause by then, by 30, I was like in classes and I had my headshots and I had done a bunch of commercials at that point. And I was like really kind of trying to do it. But, you know, this gig we do takes forever. So 13 years later, I'm like working. I also started writing, you know, later in life, in my like late 30s, I started writing. And I tell this story because I do believe you can pursue whatever you want at any age. I have the luxury of having an education, and I have found ways to make money that wasn't waiting tables, because I think a lot of actors quit because they don't want to do jobs that they don't want to do. And so I found other jobs that I liked. I was styling, I was hosting, I was blogging, I was doing all these other things to pay my bills so that I can pursue this dream of mine. But I am also envious of someone like you who got to do it so young and like was in these classes and got to kind of cultivate this, because I have crazy imposter syndrome. I think I'm a terrible actress, and I'm still like, I don't have enough training, and I want to be, you know, like there was a time where I was like, I should go get my master's in theater. Like there's always this voice in my head that's like, no, you haven't been doing this long enough, and you haven't trained enough, or you haven't worked hard enough at this thing.
Here's the thing, Gracie, like, it's so funny that it's like, I'm somewhat envious of you being so bold at 30 and still being like, no, it's never too late. I'm going to go after exactly what I want. And you're kind of saying on the flip side, you're kind of envious of me saying, I've been doing this since I was 4 or whatever.
Yeah.
The poignant thing that I want to point out is that we're in the same place.
Mm.
It didn't matter.
Oh, I just got chills.
We're sitting here having met. I was on your show. You know what I mean? Like you have to, I was a guest on your show that you worked these 13 years to be a series regular on. That is worth celebrating. And it's also worth you speaking more kindly about yourself and your ability. Because here's the thing, Gracie.
Oh my God, you're going to make me cry.
It's true, because this industry is not about talent, not about time put in. The secret is it's about energy. We have the power to convince anybody of what we want them to believe about ourselves. So I need you to say, you know what? I know I haven't been acting for my whole life, and I, you know, might not be able to be, you know, Jessica Chastain tomorrow in the eyes of Tammy Faye, but I'm obviously doing something right.
Right.
I'm obviously exactly where I'm supposed to be. I obviously have talent. I obviously am beautiful. I'm obviously kind, and I'm obviously deserving. Because that's the thing, Gracie. That is the energy that'll get you your next job when this one's over.
Right.
If you go through this, if you go through this experience having gotten this far, continuing to think negative thoughts about your ability, then you'll have to start over when it's time for the next thing. You won't be a step higher on the ladder. You'll be a step lower. So I just really want to encourage, and also just like bask in the moment, girl. We're sitting here celebrating a season 2 of a show that you're on. Like what you are making.
I know. Well, this is all right. And this is like perfect, right? Cause this is my blank. This is my blank that I struggle with all the time is I'm not confident enough. And I know that about me. And I'm constantly having to be like, stop it right now. Like you work your ass off, and that's why you got here. You are kind, and that's why you got here. People do want to work with you, and that's why you got here. You know what I mean? Like, and constantly remind myself of that stuff, because there will always be someone who's going to be more talented, and there will always be someone who's going to be more beautiful and more this and more that, skinnier, younger, old, whatever the case may be. And so having that confidence for me is definitely my blank, and the blank that I'm constantly struggling with, overcoming, you know, being like, no, I got this. I'm confident.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's always my thing. But thank you for that beautiful little pep talk because it was wonderful and you're so good at this. And you're such a light, which is why I wanted to have you on the show. I mean, you were such a light on set for all of us. I mean, I think day one, the whole cast was like, oh my God, we fucking love Ashley. Like she has to come back. Like you're just like such a light. And you know, it's hard to be a guest star on a show. It's hard to come into a set where everyone's like family and everyone, you know, I will say, I think we have a friendly set and a welcoming set.
Very much so.
But it's still like very hard and intimidating to be like the person who has to come in for a day or 2 days or however many days and bring it. And like we have like cast and crew has very little patience for a guest star who comes in and doesn't have their shit together and doesn't have their lines down, you know, and you were just like such a professional and such a light to be around. So like, thank you. I think you're amazing and I love you. And like, I'm so glad we get to work together again.
Thank you so much, my friend. I mean, I truly meant everything I said. And I have to say, I've been saying this all around town to whoever will listen. I came on to Grand Crew at an interesting time in my career because I was off a show that I was on for 4 years and I was off testing for a kajillion projects and it coming down to me and the other person. And so, you know, when Grand Crew came around, honestly, very effortlessly, it felt like that was exactly where I was supposed to be. And so to be met by the cast with the most open arms I've ever experienced coming into a show, like you said, that's already been established and a family that's already been there. It meant the world to me. You guys, you all never treated me. You guys, you treated me like I had been there the entire time, which was very shocking, but also so beautiful. And I remember I said this to someone, I was telling someone about my experience on Grand Crew and just how much I loved it and just truly love you all and was praying that, you know, we could all do it again. And I was just talking about the light. You say I'm a light, the light that you all have. And they reminded me that you get what you give. So you were not conscious of it, but the truth is it's easy to be welcomed when I wanted that. And when I, you know, wanted to put my arms around you all put your arms right back around me. And so it's such a reminder of like, be conscious of your energy. If you walk into a space and you're bad vibes, don't be surprised if you get bad vibes back. If you're in a space and you're unprepared, don't be surprised if everything else starts to crumble around you because you sometimes don't. And I'm someone who I had to realize I have a very strong energy. And I don't mean strong in like the sense of like, whoa, what are we supposed to do with this person? But I mean, strong in the sense of that, like, I know that I have an energy that can change the room. I have, if I'm up, we're going to be up. If I'm down, people are going to kind of feel that too. And so I have to be very conscious of it. But more than that, I have to just be honest about it. If ever I'm kind of going on a tangent, but if ever I am in a space where I'm not feeling my best, I have to just say it so that people can know, okay, it's okay. You know what I mean? We can recalibrate, but when it's unspoken, when people have to make assumptions or whatever, that's when things can get a little bit wonky. So again, I'm just so grateful to you all. It's been I've lived in LA for almost 13 years and it was one of my greatest experiences.
Oh, I love that you're saying that too. It actually reminded me that before Grand Crew, my last part, I think, did I do anything after that? I might've done some smaller parts after that, but I got to play this like pregnant woman going into labor during a yoga class on 911 on Fox.
Oh my gosh. One of my best friends, Aisha's on there. Aisha Hines. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't get to work with Aisha that day, but I did work with Oliver Stark and
love him.
Peter Krauser. Yeah. Who I love. Oliver was on our first season.
Yes. And Peter Krauser, I love him from Parenthood, which is one of my favorite shows of all time.
So I was so excited to do this part because one, I got to do the part and it was fun, but two, Peter Krauser was delivering my baby and spent like 12 hours in between my legs and it was amazing.
Dreams was come true.
But like, this is a perfect example, right? Like Peter Krauser, like prince of television, and then Oliver Stark, another lead on the show. They were the loveliest people I've ever worked with. They were so kind to all. There was a lot of guest stars that day and co-stars, and they were so kind to all of us. They took the time to, you know, get to know us and they don't have to talk to you during, you know, when you're in between takes. They can just go in a corner and be amongst himself, which is also fine.
Yes.
They took the time to really get to know each and every one of us. And Oliver and I are still friends. This was like 3 years ago. I remember that day, like I went home, there was an overnight shoot and I went home at like 5 a.m. and I had never been so high. Like I was just so happy by this experience. And I remember thinking like, if I ever get to be a series regular, like I'm going to make sure that I am that kind to anyone who comes on a show. Woo! Because it is so intimidating to come on as a co-star or guest or even a background actor. And if the series regulars are off-putting or they're rude or they're downright mean, which sometimes happens. And so I love what you just said, because I do think it's like the energy you put out is the energy you receive. And then you get to put that out again.
Yeah. And you never know when you're going to have to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Like, you never know. Just a couple years later, you were in the position where the universe was like, well, how are you going to show up? You said, right, you know, right, the universe was right. Like, oh, this is what you wanted. So what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. How are you going to act mm-hmm. when you have this show, 10 episodes, and it's revolving with people? How are you going to act, Gracie? And you answered the call and you were and are absolutely lovely. And you were truly one of the people that held me the tightest. And I just so appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, girl. Oh, I knew this was going to be a love fest. As we start to close out this episode, I want to narrow in on a blank for you. Is there anything throughout your life or maybe currently like right now that you have either struggled with and overcome or you're still kind of dealing with? You know, again, it doesn't have to be a negative. Like I think a lot of times these blanks kind of propel us into greatness and help us, you know, triumph over our trials and tribulations, as mm-hmm. as we say.
My blank is that I am struggling with truly seeing myself in the fullness of who I am and how others see me. So what I mean by this is what got me here was you saying that you kind of struggle with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not confidence for me. And so I was trying to figure out what is it then? It's not confidence that I struggle with. It is the belief that I truly am everything that I know myself to be. And so what I mean by that is in the moments where something foreign or abrupt kind of can have the tendency to throw me off, I'm struggling with the recalibration. And the recalibration, I want to become smoother and easier based on who I already know that I am and where I already know that I'm headed. It's like I can easily forget and then I have to do all this work to get back to remembering.
Uh-huh. Almost like not solid. The word solid's coming to mind. Like almost like or not unwavering enough.
Yes, 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 yes. I want to be when the no's come, when the shocking news comes, when the disappointment comes, when the frustration comes, I want to be able to instantaneously bounce back and remember that it's bigger than all of this. This is all minuscule in the grand scheme. And not only that, it's leading me to exactly where I'm supposed to be. Like the thing is, what's really bringing this out of me, Gracie, is my podcast. Mm. It's basically what my podcast is about.
Yeah.
What's happening is that it's holding up a mirror, just like relationships do. And it's forcing me to say, wow, this is something that I need to get stronger at. I need to get even stronger at basking in the trials, because my life has proven over and over and over and over and over again that it always is going to lead to a triumph.
Mm.
I have the lived experience. So all I have to do is trust and surrender.
Mm.
But that truly, in closing, the blank is merging my knowing with my belief.
Right.
Merging the two. Because it's not that I don't know. I think sometimes when people feel like they lack confidence, it's because they don't know. I know. I'm not at all confused about the plans that God has for my life, where I'm headed, what the work I've already done, where it's leading. So why do I get thrown off sometimes? Things don't go the way I think that they should.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But then I also wonder, like, isn't that just part of being human? Like we go through this and And yeah, it's going to take a second to get back. But what's really important is that you get back to it.
Yeah. So that was the other part I was thinking in my head, like giving myself grace for feeling it. But the problem is that it's also inducing my own suffering. That's what I'm trying to get away from. I think there's a way to feel it and move through it, but not suffer. Because suffering comes from a lack of faith and a lack of belief. So that's what I'm trying to fortify myself.
Not sit in it.
It's not even about sitting in it. It's just about feeling it in a way that can be debilitating is a really strong word.
Right.
But like feeling it in a way that is almost void of knowing what I know.
Right.
Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like it's about feeling it, but also having the confidence of what I know to be true.
Right.
So that's what I'm working on. And the reason I'm working on it, Gracie, is because the power of the tongue is really important. So you speaking more kindly over your life, your career, where you're headed is going to make all of the difference in everything that's ahead for you.
Yeah.
And for me, reducing the back and forth turmoil of what I believe to be true and what might be happening at that time is also, once I figure that out, it's catapulting me to where I know that I'm supposed to go. I have a knowing that it's that little piece that God's like, you got to shed that, Ashley. You got to trust. Once you do that, you're open to everything that I have for you. Well, I think ultimately, if it were to be one word, it's my blank is surrender. That's my blank.
Not surrendering enough. Oh, I like that.
I pray for more surrender. I pray for more. And it's out of a need for control, obviously.
Oh, girl, I have issues.
But like you said, we can't control this. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what's great about life, I guess, is it's spontaneity and anything can happen at any given time. And we hope for the best, but.
And that's the exciting part. And even that, just as actors, I've started like relishing in the fact that like, because we don't have such a linear career path, because we don't just work in finance, maybe, or I don't know, work in, you know, sales or whatever, which are great professions, but they're very linear for the most part. You can cap at a certain point. Because we're not in that, there's something really exciting about like, we truly could end this podcast and you could be like, oh my gosh, I'm nominated for an Emmy. And I could be like, what? Like that can happen. Like,
right.
There are things you could get the call for your dream role tomorrow.
Yeah.
You could also not, but the truth is we have to hold on that we could. And the fact that we have a career spanning decades of it can happen and it can happen specifically for you is a blessing rather than looking at it as such a negative.
Right. 100%. No, I wouldn't want to do anything else. Like what I love about what I do is the freedom to do what I love. And, you know, I write, so I also get to do that as an actor and have the freedom, the blessing of being on a show means I can write and not be obsessed with whether or not I sell this thing or scared like, oh, I have to sell this thing so I can survive. It's like, oh, if I sell this thing, it'd be a beautiful bonus. Like how incredible is that? You know, how freeing is that? How beautiful is that?
Yeah.
So I love not surrendering enough. We never had that before. And I feel like it also encompasses so much, you know what I mean? And there's so much in that word surrender. Oh, cause I could be guilty of that too, because I like organization and plans I'm very type A and I'm very much a control freak and I like things to go the way I want them to go, which is I think part of why, like when we were waiting for season two, why it was so stressful for me. Cause it's like, well, I can't plan anything if I don't know what's happening. You know what I mean? So it was like affecting all these other pieces to my life. And there was I have a therapist who I love and she kind of gave me similar advice. You just have to surrender that this is the job you've chosen and this is part of the job and breathe into it. Know everything's going to be okay. Whether the show goes or not, you will figure it out. You'll get the next job. You'll get the next thing.
We're all winning. Literally, we're all winning and we all get to work together. Like, there's nothing to complain about.
Which also is like, you know, people say that all the time. Like, you cannot be jealous when you see other people. Like, I'm always so happy when I see my friends booking people I don't even know in real life that we're just like Instagram friends, other actresses yes. that we're all just Instagram friends. And, you know, I made a conscious decision because I was a blogger for so long at a certain point to unfollow a lot of bloggers that I just couldn't deal with seeing anymore. And then following like what I wanted my career to be. Right. So I started following all these like beautiful, intelligent, talented women of color who are actors, directors, writers, all the things I want to be. And this was maybe like 6 or 7 years ago. And suddenly my feed is now this beautiful like cultivation of like wins and, you know, people still sharing their disappointments in the other parts of Hollywood that also exist. Right. Mm-hmm. But then also people being like, I booked this, I wrote this, I sold this, I did. And that's so inspiring to me. That's like, yes, 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 yes. Never once was I like, oh God, they're doing it and I'm not. It's always like, they're doing it, I'm just getting closer. You know, the more they succeed, the closer I get to that.
I always say this to people. If you ever have the feeling of jealousy or envy creep up in your spirit, try your best to transform that into inspiration. Mm-hmm. It's just a negative thought that you can quickly transform into a positive thought. If you're yeah. jealous of somebody, if you're envious, it really is just that you're inspired by them. So make the better choice.
Mm. I love yeah. that. Wow. Real quick, give me a little update on life today for Ashley. What's going on, girl? I know you're married, recently married, right?
Yes. 9 months, very soon. Married life is amazing. Like Daryl and I look back at our wedding pictures and we're like, who are those kids? It was only 9 months ago, but it feels like we've grown so much even just in the 9 months. And honestly, we're just having fun. Mm. Like, we're best friends. So it really is, it just truly solidified, I guess, in a legal sense that we're besties for the restie, but we were already living that way before. So, I just feel really honored to have such a wonderful, loving husband, as I do in Daryl. And then my podcast I'm just so proud of it. It's yeah. so crazy that like, even that, like God has shown me that like, you could have never told me that there would be something else in my life that I would be just as, if not more proud of than something that was immersed in my acting experience. And that's how I feel about Trials to Triumphs. Like it is at this point in my career, I would say my proudest accomplishment. I'm so proud that I have a platform that's all about goodness and hope and joy. Like that to me is, I'm proud of it because I'm using all of my God-given gifts for good. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is part of why, I won't speak for everybody, but I know it's part of why I'm here. It's directly in alignment with my purpose. And so I feel really blessed to be able to do it and to be sharing it with the world. I'm just so proud. New episodes drop every Monday and it's wherever you find podcasts. And then lots of travel. I'm traveling so much, which is also a blessing just because for so much of my career, I didn't travel. Mm-hmm. So much of my life, I didn't travel. Honestly, at times I was scared to, if I'm completely honest, I felt like I'm going to be missing out on something here, mm-hmm. which I would encourage all actors, all performers to really let go of. Like you have to live your life. You have to have enjoyable moments and experiences outside of whatever you do. And then also there were a lot of years I couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. So I feel, again, basking in my gratitude practice, I just feel so grateful that I'm in a season of my life where I am able to travel and have new experiences and show up for people and family and friends and birthday parties and trips and whatever it is. I'm just happy that I'm able to do that now. And then just enjoying my dog, Diva. I love you. We have our pits. I know. Dog.
Yeah, she's best. So cute. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm in a really good place. I'm in a really, really, really good place and excited for just also what's next on the acting horizon and kind of similar to what I said earlier, like allowing it to surprise me, which can only come from surrender.
Oh, well, Ashley, this has been incredible. And if you're okay with it, we'll call this episode Not Surrendering Enough.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you for asking. I really appreciate that.
Yes. Yes. I love that. We name it together.
Yeah.
I love you, and I can't wait to see you on set.
Thank you, my friend. Thanks for having me, and congratulations on such a wonderful platform.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Not Blank Enough. You can learn more about our guest in the show notes. Please subscribe to Not Blank Enough wherever you get your podcast. And if you like what you hear, please consider leaving a rate and review. You can also follow us on Instagram at Not Blank Enough Pod. Our show today was executive produced by Gracie Mercedes and Dave Hill, and produced by Douglas Sarine and Colleen Beasley. Not Blank Enough is a Gumption Pictures production.